Hello and welcome to our weekly podcast of Who's Here in the Hamptons. I'm Dan Rettina, your host, broadcasting from my home in the Hamptons, where I have lived for over 55 years. I've written a dozen books about this glorious place, and I've seen it grow through the years from small tourist towns, quaint fishing villages, and a summer playground for high society to what it is today, a world-class resort for celebrities, artists, musicians, authors, and billionaires. In my podcast, I will bring you interviews with not only these people, but also prominent local people who have helped shape the Hamptons. Welcome to Dan's Talks. My guest today is April Gornick, who is one of the founders of The Church, which is a facility here in Sag Harbor where art and programs are conducted almost daily now, I think. And it's a former Methodist church. And it's just one of the grand entertainment venues here in the Hamptons for intellectuals, I guess you would call it, or normal people who aren't intellectuals.
Very specifically, if I may add, we've envisioned it as both creativity center and a community center and an art center. Not necessarily not in that order, because we love that we're getting people from all kinds of disciplines, giving talks and letting people have intellectual and other adventures. Printmaking, for instance, is something that we offer. We have a really huge range of things that we are doing because we do want to appeal to multiple sensibilities. And also to point out particularly that creativity exists in mathematics and gardening and science and, you know, so it's a creativity center, I'd say, first and foremost, creativity/community center.
Also huge, built as one of the grandest churches in Sag Harbor, rivals the Presbyterian and some of the others. How high is that? It's at least 40 feet, I think.
Oh, yeah, at least, because the vault that we left exposed on the main floor of the church had been raised when it was moved to its present location in 1864. It was built in 1835 on High Street, and it was meant to sort of overlook the village, but then there was also getting your sled up there in the middle of winter when it was icy and the wear and tear of that. So it was moved down 29 years later to its present location. And by that time, a Greek Revival church, as it had been, was totally passé. So the people that moved it also added the stone floor that it sits on and the cupola, because what's more Italian than a bell tower? And so they improved it that way as it was moved. And so it became even grander than it had been in its past location. And it is very roomy, and we tried to keep it very open. So for people who haven't been there, they're going to see initials of the men who moved it there in 1864, who signed their initials and the date 1864, which is clearly visible on the very top joist of the rafters. And it was never intended to be seen. It was their little secret authorization. But you can go see it now. And we actually have a door downstairs on which are listed all the people who built the church for us, that renovated the church for us. So we're trying to continue that cool tradition of honoring workers.
Well, it's a spectacular space in the main nave. I guess it is at least 100 people, I think, could sit in there at any one time.
Oh, more. Yeah, we're zoned for more than that, maybe 120 to 50. We do everything by fire regulations, of course. But yeah, we can fit a lot of people in there. And it's very roomy. And it also has astonishing acoustics. So when we do music performances, for instance, we've done a lot of live music in that, including classical, jazz, opera, you name it. I mean, it's a really big spread. Contemporary, we had GE and Jorma perform. We've had an astonishing array of and variety of performers. And the church, because the wood is so old and the rosin has crystallized and all this 300-year-old pine, there's an additional sort of amplification that the wood itself gives, like the way that Guarneri and Stradivari violins augment sound. You get that from the wood in the church with other forms of music. So, and that was just a gift. That was just an unexpected gift that we ended up with this extraordinary acoustic aspect.
We're about 20 days before Christmas. And what's scheduled between now and mid-January that is of interest?
Oh, well, we have a lot of things going on. We just had a poetry was yesterday. This afternoon is featuring a person who works for us at the church named Janoy Johnson, who's from Jamaica. And he is a serious scholar of Yoruban and other African diasporic religions and the way that they've affected the Caribbean. And he's giving a talk on the feminine divine in those religions this afternoon. And he's also a dancer. So we've had him do this before. We've had him talk a little bit about this before. This is an extension of that talk where he actually can perform dances in which I've seen him do this. He suddenly incorporates a kind of a feminine spirit. It's amazing. That's just this afternoon. We had a drawing workshop also yesterday, as well as a wonderful talk that Sherry Pasquarella, who I cannot say enough about. She has taken the reins of the church and is leading it brilliantly. And she had given a talk with Ben Hassett, who's a photographer who's in our current show, which is the Churchennial show. And the Churchennial is all of the residents that we've had for the last 3-4 years. And all of those who wanted to be in the show could participate. And Ben Hassett is in it. And he's also quite a photographic historian. And his piece is a kind of a print that's modern and kind of multiple chairs in different colors. But they did a survey of photography over the last 150 years, basically, in which they both brought slides and then talked about photography and the history. It got very like complicated and wonderful. So that was really for photographic weenies. It was great.
Well, what's coming up, say, after
December? Oh, well, so the big news for us after the holidays is that the Martha Graham Dance Company, who were the first visiting artists that we ever had at the church, amazingly, are coming back. And we're going to accompany that with a show that includes some incredible sculpture and set aspects that they did in Kuludin Noguchi. And we're going to have performances, and it's going to be a fantastic exhibit. And this is something that Sherry has put together with the Martha Graham Foundation and dancers. So that's something that no one should miss, because they're having an incredible kind of anniversary celebration of Martha Graham, and it's going to be brilliant. When we opened with the Martha Graham dancers first in 2021-22, we actually had to have them masked and have a limited amount of them be visitors just for safety and health reasons. But people came masked to watch rehearsals and to watch the direction the choreographers were working with. And all the choreographers for the company are very dedicated to Graham's vision. And so, like Sherry's vision, with our vision for the church, the Martha Graham choreographers maintain that vision and just expand it. So it's going to be a fantastic month, like for a couple of months, actually, for Martha Graham being there. So I welcome everyone to come and experience their charge, because they're incredibly inspirited, joyful, profound, balanced contemporary dancers. And you'll see so much in it on our website, because it's going to be multiple events. It won't be just one thing. It'll be many, many, many events with talks and performances and rehearsals and et cetera. So the best thing for anyone interested to do is to go to our website, thechurchsagharbor.org, and there you'll find a whole schedule of the events.
What else is coming up?
Past that, we're going to have, as we always do every year, we'll have the participation of Pearson High School. We'll have the Sag Harbor in Focus photo show. We have a fashion show planned for later. That's a collaboration with Mary Jane Marcassiano, who works with the Historical Museum also and works with the kids to present their creative efforts. We're going to have in the summer for the 250th anniversary of the United States, we're going to have a show that focuses on landscape and mostly contemporary, but some historic representations of it. And I haven't seen the checklist yet, so I don't know who's in it exactly, but we're very excited because it's Donna DeSalvo is one of the curators. She's a very, very well-known curator who has worked with the Whitney and other August museums and the Wexler Center for years and years and years. So that's going to be very exciting.
It's been open now for 3 years, 2.5 years. And what are some of the highlights that come to your mind that you think about when you think of events and that have taken place at the church?
Oh, highlight events. My God, there have been so many. We regularly have Bruce Wallace off presenting new work that he's composed. We have the Sag Harbor Song Festival, which is young opera singers that perform every September. And it's kind of in the spirit of auditions at the Met, which is a really great thing to be able to offer the public. They're always sold out. They're always fantastic. We've had other classical and other compositional, more contemporary compositional works that have been premiered there. That's just music. In dance, we've had jazz, contemporary ballet once, but also accompanied by talks about the way that people work, the inspirations that they had when they've created what they are presenting. So there's usually a dimension with what we do that also lets people interact with whoever is speaking and presenting something so that they are given a more intimate view of the creative process. That's really important to us. We regularly have printmaking workshops that are led by Samuel Havens, who is just a genius. He's great. And he works with everybody in the community. Beginners, people who have never made a print before. These are usually monotype prints, if you know anything about printmaking, and a lot of people don't. But we've had Rishi Johnson and Amy Silman and incredibly important contemporary artists come and work there too with him. We have a very, very full schedule of printmaking going on. We've had several ceramicists as visiting artists who are extraordinary, and I hope that we can expand our potential to include something like ceramics. You need a lot of space for that. Plus, there's the little matter of a hot kiln that bakes them. So we're trying to figure out some way of including ceramics. Sculpture, you know, Eric had the Ark last summer, arguably the most popular show we ever did as an exhibition. And that ran all summer long. I don't know if you had the pleasure, but it was all sculptures of animals that met you when you walked into the church in this powerful, profound, relatively mute way. So you would like walk through the show having these experiences of encountering these beings that artists had created, recreated, abstracted. It was all manner of things. It was like over 100 years of representations, and they were all sculptures. So it was like you were surrounded by these presences of animals. It was one of the most powerful shows ever. And it's traveling actually to Powerhouse in Brooklyn. So we've had a little luck with that. I mean, the shows have been like amazing. We've done so many of them and really top draft exhibitions and curations. But so all the way from that to when Nada Berry talked about her life and how she arrived in Sag Harbor and how Sag Harbor changed her and she changed it, to Lisa Field at the Five and Dime talking about how the creativity involved in keeping a business alive for over 100 years now. That was a great talk. And, you know, we regularly have things like cake and community parties. And there's a holiday party coming up in just a week or so that I invite people to come to. They're just open free-for-alls. We try to keep our prices low as possible because we want as many people to be able to afford coming to talks and events as possible. So I don't know if we've ever had a ticket price that was more than $100. When we do a creativity conference, which is also a yearly event, which always happens in April in this year, the second week of April. That will be, so far, there's a poet, there's a mathematician, there's scientists, there's an artist talking about AI, actually. We have like an extraordinary roster for that day of talks that culminates in like a cocktail party where people can talk to all the speakers and there's a panel at the end. It's fascinating. But we're trying to bring all these different people together so that there's like literally something for everybody to be wowed by and made curious by and learn things. So it's education in a way is central to what we're doing, but it's not overt. It's just like the wonder of discovery. That's our focus.
Listening to you talk about this, I was wondering what the animals that greeted you when you came in were in that sculpture.
Oh, I can tell you vividly, there was a cat that was made of spikes that was fantastic. It looked almost like a stegosaurus cat. There was a cat that was sort of arching and stretching. There, immediately behind that, there was Charles Ray Wolf, which was like silver and weighed a ton and was extraordinary. The thing that caught your eye, if not the first, with the most impact, was a full-size, literally full-size sculpture of an upside-down juvenile African elephant poised on its trunk. You kind of couldn't tell how it was suspended. You look for wires, but there are none. It was this massive elephant with, you know, tusks and whatnot. It was kind of a surreal fantasy image of an elephant and its gravity and its power and its poise, but, you know, like astonishing. There was an owl behind that that was made of all these bristly materials. There was actually a chimpanzee that had walking sticks that was meant to be sort of like almost approaching humanness. That was a very unique sculpture. It goes on. We have a catalog for it if anyone ever wants to flip through it. Who missed that show, Dan, if that includes you? But it was really extraordinary. But we've also had, some of our big shows, and this is one of them, all of our big shows have focused on something that anybody could walk in and enjoy that sense of discovery with. And you're never hit with like long wall tags that say, you know, what the artist really means when you look at this thing, which you cannot decipher and probably don't even care about. Instead, you're given like a more of a visceral experience, more of an emotional experience, and a more accessible experience. So we did the boxing show a couple of years ago. That traveled down to Florida, actually to a museum down there, the Norton. And then we had Women in Humor show. We had a show called Threading the Needle, which was contemporary art that's being made now of classic techniques for using fabric and thread. So weaving and stuffed things and fascinating things. Everybody from Louise Bourgeois to, it was a very, very, very broad show. And our very first show, for those who may have forgotten or never saw it, was a show that was called Road Rage. And it was all about cars. Because Eric thought of this. It was just trying to make something that was really, really, really fundamental to our culture that everybody could relate to. And we had fantastic things. We had a car that was made of pinata materials that was a lowrider and was sort of hoisted up so it had that bounce look to it. We had incredible cars. We had sculpture of the car that James Dean died in, squished up. And then we had this kind of fantasy car that a local artist had made. It was an amazing show. And also we had Laurie Anderson perform. If you know who Laurie Anderson is, she's a very famous contemporary performer. And she performed a car concert at Havens Beach during the pandemic. And everybody came in masks. And there was an actual concert script for the music. I don't even know if it's right to call it a script because it was like cars honking and then drums that were made out of car parts playing on it. So even in the short time that we've been open, it's like 4 years, we've had this amazing amount of things happen. And we just keep going because we just keep getting and having ideas. And as I said, especially with Sherry and the incredible team of people that we have working with us now, we have an acceleration that just seems automatic. So it's been very joyful and very exciting, and it's just going to continue to be. And for instance, while we have Martha Graham, we'll have things related to Martha Graham and dance and Noguchi sculptures and talks about all of that and et cetera, et cetera. It's like we try to make everything a full experience for people who might be less interested in the dance and more interested in the Noguchi, for instance.
Well, thank you very much for this talk and telling me about the church. Did you consider other names for this building?
We've been asked that. Of course, the thing is that before we bought the church for over a dozen years, because I had been like so involved in when I was with Save Sag Harbor and now this still the Sag Harbor Partnership, and we were always trying to do projects to kind of save things in the village, people would like grab me on the street and they'd go, "What's happening with that church? What's happening with the church? I want to know what the church is going to become. Do you know who, is somebody bought the church yet?" So a variety of questions that were all about like, what do I know about the church? So I came to be completely comfortable with the idea that it was the church, because it always was the church for everybody who wondered what its next incarnation would be and worrying that, you know, is it going to be a McMansion, which it was going to be just before we bought it. Then when it came to naming it, it was like, I literally couldn't imagine calling it anything but the church. And honestly, it had the Rainbow School was in there for preschoolers when it was a church. People were memorialized. We tried to save the memorial plaques, but they had been shipped away. There were all these things about the church that I think is creates a leftover spirit in the place. I think that the church itself, the building, has this kind of history that transmits to people when they're there. I know that sounds a little woo-woo, but I'm telling you, people are just, they love it, and they love the way we've kind of exposed things in it. I'm going to say it has a soulful feeling. You know, the building has a, it's almost like it has a soul itself or something. I was raised Catholic, so full disclosure, who knows?
Well, thank you for taking the time to talk about this incredible place.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I mean, I can't say enough. I hope that someday maybe you'll talk to Sherry Pasquarella, because she has such a great vision for its future, and we're looking forward to it being continued way into the future, way after we're gone. And people have replaced the portraits of the noteworthy Sag Harbor folks in the windows with new ones.
I see. The changing of the baton.
Well, it will happen. Yeah.
Thanks again. I'll talk
Thank
to you.
Thank you, Dan. It's great seeing you. And I hope you have a wonderful holiday. I hope everybody listening to this has a great holiday season and safe, of course.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Thanks.